Welcome to Homeground. I'm Brian Kahn. As technology speeds up, we increasingly live in a world of silos. Our focus becomes deeper, but often more narrow. And across a wide range of economic and social issues, we're finding that by climbing out of those silos and sharing knowledge across boundaries, we can produce better results. That's precisely what the Montana Healthcare Foundation is doing in the field of Indian healthcare. Tressie White is program officer. Tressie, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be here.
Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up here in Helena, born and raised here in Helena. My mother was a stay-at-home mother and a homemaker and raised the children, and my father was a union heavy equipment operator and worked road construction, building the roads all across Montana.
You mentioned children. How many in your family?
I am the youngest of six children.
You went to high school here?
I went to high school here. I graduated from Capitol High School. I have been married for 19 years and have three children and have raised them here.
If I was to ask you, in entering high school, who was Tressie White? In terms of what she identified with, what her values were, where they came from, what would you say?
I would say that I was a member of the Helena community and was an American Indian living in the urban city. Born and raised here in Helena as an urban Indian.
Both parents Indian?
They are not. My father is non-Indian. My mother is an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians from North Dakota. She was raised here in Helena in an area referred to sometimes as Moccasin Flats. It was an area in Helena where many of the Indian families settled.
I've never heard that. Tell me about it.
It's an area, I always say it's close to the old railroad depot and Kmart. It was an area in Helena where many of the Indian families, when they came to this area, they all tended to settle in.
What period are we talking about the settlement of that area?
Probably from the 1930s to the 1970s. I know that I spent a lot of time there. My grandmother's home was there. I had many aunts and uncles and cousins that all lived within that area.
That fascinates me because I've lived here 30 years and I never heard about it. So it sounds like it was a serious community there. And now, was it basically one tribe or many tribes?
I would say it was multiple tribes. I knew people who were members of the Little Shell Band, and there were Blackfeet and families from Rocky Boy that were Chippewa Cree.
What I read as a layperson about history is sometimes tribes got along well, sometimes they didn't get along well. How was it there when people are intermixed in multiple tribes? Problems or solidarity or what?
I would say as urban Indians that we gathered together and were very close, more like a family. Everybody spent a lot of time together. We had a community center that was the Helena Indian Alliance, established in the 1960s, and that is still here to this day. It's located on Euclid Avenue here, historically on Last Chance Gulch in Helena. It was a community center that was established for a place for the American Indians to gather. And then later on, they received a contract with Indian Health Service to provide healthcare services to the American Indian urban population.
Let's talk about that. Contract with Indian Health Service. Now, Indian Health Service is a federal organization. Pardon my ignorance, but it's a federal organization, right?
That's correct.
So when they contract, that means that they get a certain amount of money and then they provide the services by hiring the staff to do it?
That's correct. Indian Health Service is a federal agency tasked with providing health care services to American Indians within our nation.
That's a result of treaty obligations, correct?
As a result of treaty obligations,
okay.
That's correct.
So under that structure then, as a treaty obligation, urban and reservation Indians have access, theoretically, to health care, which they don't have to pay for because of the treaties, correct?
That's correct. Urban Indian health centers, there's about 42 urban Indian health programs across the nation. Montana is home to 5 of those urban Indian health centers. Urban Indian health centers are nonprofit organizations that are governed by an American Indian board of directors, and they carry a contract. Their budget is less than 1% of the overall Indian Health Service federal budget.
That throws me a curve because in research for the program, I learned that nationally, something like 60% of Indians live in urban areas, And in Montana, it's 40% of the native population, 60% on reservations. You said less than 1% of their budget goes to urban care. That suggests there's a problem.
That's right. And I would certainly say from the 2013 state health assessment that those statistics were very shocking and alarming.
I'm not familiar with the study.
That report showed that American Indians living within Montana statistically die 20 years younger than the rest of the Montana population.
I can see why that was shocking. That would be roughly 50 years of age?
That's correct.
Have you personally experienced this disparity of health and life expectancy in acquaintances or family in your life?
Just about a year ago, lost an uncle. He was 54 years old. He had suffered substance use disorders for many, many years. He did not have access to preventative and primary care services throughout his life, and Medicaid was not available. He did not have access to health care, and I believe his life could have been extended for much, much longer had he received the treatment and the care that he needed.
You're a healthcare professional. When you look at this, what are the major reasons for that difference in life expectancy?
Historically, Indian Health Service has not been able to provide all of the necessary services for people to get all of the care that they need. When Indian Health Service is so severely underfunded at only 60% of the need, and they have very, very limited dollars to send people to other areas outside Indian Health Service.
Meaning, let me just see if I understand this. The services that are accessible through the IHS mm-hmm. are not what I get if I go to St. Pete's Hospital. They're like rural health care minus.
That's very fair to say.
Okay,
that's
so
correct.
If I have a complicated situation, I'm referred to the Billings Clinic, let's say, from Fort Peck. Mm-hmm. What's the problem with that? Limited funding?
Very limited historically, very limited funding. It was really just life or limb. So people were prioritized based on their health condition. And unless they were, really, really sick, there were not funds to refer them to the outside providers. So as an example, if a person needed to see a cardiologist in Billings, they would then need to go through an entire process to find out if the funds were available. And often those limited funds by 6 months of the year had already been used up. If the person prior to Medicaid expansion, there were no funds and those people did not have access to private insurance, those outside providers could not provide service to someone who was not covered by an insurance carrier. Another barrier to the care is often transportation.
How do you mean?
I mean, to access care in an urban area that has the necessary service, it can be many hours away from the person's home.
You mean if they live on the reservation?
That's right. If
okay.
they live on the reservation, often transportation, they do not have transportation. There's a lack of transportation. They may not have a car. They may be caring for their extended family at home, and it's hard to travel to a urban area to get that service.
Now, you just said that, if I understood you correctly, the budget, there's a fixed budget, and they run out at 6 months' time. Is that typical?
That was typical. That absolutely was typical. Now, Medicaid expansion has improved that.
We did a show on Medicaid expansion with Mike Dennison.
Great.
Experienced reporter, and he indicated that in Indian country, there was a major impact in terms of accessing health care. Is that fair or not?
That's absolutely fair to say. I think towards the end of December, about 86,000 Montanans were covered
right.
with Medicaid. About 15% of those covered were American Indians.
And the functional difference is what?
Well, Indian Health Service, tribal-operated clinics, and urban Indian health centers all now have the ability to receive reimbursement for the services they're providing by Medicaid. Services that are provided by Indian Health Service and tribally-operated clinics, the federal government pays 100% of those costs. So they're actually
from
no cost
fund.
From a different fund. So those are all 100% federal funds and do not affect our Medicaid budget.
You're listening to Homeground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Montana Healthcare Foundation Program Officer Tressie White about Indian health care. Let's talk about what the Montana Healthcare Foundation is doing with the tribal healthcare system, the different elements that you've outlined. Indian Healthcare Service, tribal clinics, urban Indian healthcare centers. What's going on and when did it start?
So Montana Healthcare Foundation, from the very beginning, really the board and the leadership staff identified American Indian Health as a focus area. Right now, we work in three different areas. We have strengthening American Indian Health Services, American Indian Health Leadership and Governance, and also working to reduce the health disparities American Indians face.
Pick one, let's talk about it. You got three. What do you say as an individual is the highest priority?
I think a really important piece of work that the Healthcare Foundation has been providing support for is the American Indian Health Leadership Development and Support for that group.
Okay, what is that translated to in nuts and bolts? Leadership and development.
Leadership and development, that's really providing support to the tribal health programs and the urban Indian health centers. One way the foundation has done that was in about 2015, a couple of the tribal health directors had got together and they approached the foundation and they said, one area we'd really like to be able to come together to share our work. Our reservations and our tribal communities are very far apart within
right.
Montana, and they lacked the ability to come together to share their successes and their challenges and to really be able to work together. The urban Indian health centers were often left out of all of the conversations, and they were not connected to the tribal health systems either.
Okay, so what does the foundation do when people say, hey, we're not communicating with each other? Okay, what happens?
The foundation just can provide support. We can provide the reimbursement for travel, and we can provide support to cover the costs of the meeting, and also taking the time to develop the agenda based on the tribal health director's feedback. So we really just help convene this group. So for the first time in April of 2016, all seven tribal health directors and the five urban Indian health directors came together for a two-day meeting. The group really set some priority areas that they'd like to work on over the next couple of years. One area, when the state health assessment had come to light, the group said, we really need to be working together to change how healthcare is delivered and to improve the statistics in Montana for our American Indian people.
This was the first time they got together.
This was the first time. It really was historical. I was fortunate to be a member of that group and invited, as I was the executive director of the Helena Indian Alliance at that time. It really was a really wonderful experience to have the urban Indian health directors at the table with the tribal health programs. I remember from that first meeting a conversation with all of the tribal health directors that they did not necessarily know what the urban programs did. They were very unfamiliar with the urban Indian health centers.
Wow.
And the urban Indian programs are delivering care, essential medical care, mental health services, substance use services to their tribal members when their tribal members would leave their reservations to come to urban areas. And so it just really, I remember the tribal health directors just being so surprised
Wow.
at what the urban programs were offering and providing to American Indians.
You kindly provided me with the minutes of the first meeting in April of 2016, and the priorities established by the group were six. What jumps out at you, looking back now 2 years later, as the most important of those items?
I think out of those six priorities that just included collaboration between tribal health and urban Indian health programs, that is one of the most important areas that they could really support each other and could talk about how they could work together to provide better services to
How's
the population.
Going? It's one thing to talk about collaboration, and I've had some experience. It's another thing to set aside the time to actually do it.
I think it's still a work in progress, but communication has really improved between the tribal and the urban Indian health programs. They often share the same patient, Many times Indian people will live on a reservation and come to an urban Indian health center, and this way they can really share those health records between each other. This was not being done before. I would certainly say that was not.
All right, now, have they met since April 2016?
The group has really found this to be a very important meeting, and they have been meeting quarterly ever since April 2016. They just had their most recent meeting, March 1st and 2nd. We actually hosted the group in Bozeman, Montana.
So if they've been meeting quarterly, that's 8 meetings. What's changed in your mind as most significantly through this dialogue?
I think really one very important piece that had happened was the group coming together as a result of the state health assessment showing the results that American Indians in Montana statistically die 20 years sooner than the rest of Montanans, and they approached the governor, and the governor, as a result of that meeting, and created the Office of American Indian Health.
In the administration?
It actually is an office that is a separate office, but it's overseen by the Department of Health and Human Services.
And its mission?
Its mission is really to improve the health status of American Indians in Montana and reduce the health disparities.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Montana Healthcare Foundation Program Officer Tressie White about Indian healthcare. When did you shift from Chief Executive Officer of the Helena Indian Alliance to your current position with the Montana Healthcare Foundation?
So I departed the Helena Indian Alliance in May of 2017 and came on board with the foundation in June of 2017.
Less than a year.
Less than a year, although I've worked very closely with the foundation really from the very beginning as a grantee. Montana Healthcare Foundation has specific funding set aside to strengthen the health system, and that funding is specifically available to tribal health programs and to urban Indian health centers.
So you come from one perspective, operating a program. Now you're working for the Healthcare Foundation, whose mission, as was explained to us recently in a show with Dr. Wernham, I would call it a catalyst to leverage efficiency of funding. What are the key focuses of the foundation's initiative under your leadership?
Yes. So one important area is just strengthening the Indian Health Service and the tribal health programs within Montana, and that includes the urban Indian health programs.
What does strengthening mean?
That means that we can provide funding for them if they need additional training. For example, we gave the Blackfeet Tribal Health program a very small $20,000 grant to establish a school-based health clinic. That program has been up and going for a little over a year. They've been serving the Native students within the Blackfeet Reservation, and it has really expanded care. The program has brought in over $1 million in revenue from Medicaid billing into that program. They've been able to bring on additional providers and are now expanding their services to add mental health program and also substance abuse services within that school-based clinic.
Now, school-based clinic is a technical term, but I'm gathering it means you've got a clinic in the school?
That's right. This clinic is actually located in just a building right outside of the school, but it's a building that's owned by the school.
Is that sort of in-school medical treatment facility typical or atypical in reservation country?
I would say it's atypical, really, across Montana. I think that there's probably only 6 to 8 school-based clinics, tribal or non-tribal, across our state.
All right. Have you been to the Blackfeet Clinic?
I have.
What was the experience like for you?
It was just really amazing to see entire families. Parents can give permission to the medical providers, and those students are able to leave their class to come and see the medical provider. They don't lose credit or they don't receive an absence for leaving that class. They can get the necessary care that they need, and then they can just be returned right back to class and have received all of those services. It's very helpful to the families.
I can imagine. Now, let me just see if I'm getting you right here. Let's say a kid is starting to drink. which is a common problem. We interviewed Attorney General Fox all over the state of Montana. The biggest problem in substance abuse, we think of opioids, it's alcohol.
Yes.
Okay, so let's say you got a kid that's starting to drink. Mm-hmm. You're saying you have counselors there or mental health people who can help that child early on. Is that fair?
It's fair to say that they were working up to that. We actually have given them an additional small grant to bring on mental health providers and substance use providers. And so when those children come and see the medical provider, a brief screening can be done at that time. And if the youth is at risk, then just a warm handoff to one of those behavioral health providers could be provided.
My understanding is that there's a recent rash of juvenile suicides on the Salish Kootenai Reservation.
That's correct.
Is the foundation involved in that?
In response to that, we were approached by the Two Eagle River School. It's a tribal school on the Salish Kootenai Reservation, and they requested assistance to bring on a behavioral health therapist within the school to start addressing some of these issues within the school. From our funding, a new partnership with the Salish Kootenai Tribal Health Behavioral Health Program has now formed a partnership with that tribal school, and they are just beginning to bring behavioral health therapists in within the school and can work one-on-one with the youth within the school.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about an integrated system of healthcare delivery, and my understanding is that in some tribal situations, there are cultural differences between tribal members, family members, or even between tribes. You're talking about a dialogue that you've sponsored as the foundation, the quarterly meetings. Does that issue of potentially tension within those units or elements pose a problem in getting full collaboration of people working together, learning from each other, sharing experiences, and moving forward?
I would say it presents a challenge to the group. Over the past 2 years of the group meeting, I mean, we've had some changes in leadership, which often can result in changes of the leadership of the tribal health programs.
And which can be disruptive.
Which can be very disruptive and can make the progress move a little slower.
How do you deal with that? That's obviously a deep historical cultural reality. What's the process for breaking down barriers that interfere with efficient delivery of healthcare services? The process, do you interface with tribal leaders, or is this a priority for the foundation? What would you say?
I think we work really hard to develop relationships with the tribal health directors, with the people who are actually on the ground, working within the health system, with also the tribal leaders. So we just understand how important all of those relationships are for us to move forward. And we meet them where they're at and really work with them to find out what their specific needs are. And then we'll work closely with them to discuss how we can support those needs. One example is the Blackfeet Community College. We have provided a small grant to them in looking at integrated behavioral health services. And through that process, they have brought together different organizations who are delivering services. The Federally Qualified Health Center from Cutbank, which is the small city just outside of the reservation, the Indian Health Service providers, the tribal health providers, and bringing them all together to meet on a regular basis to talk about who's delivering the services, what services are available. So everybody is really aware of that entire system of care that's happening, and people can then make the correct referrals to those different providers and just bringing everyone to the table to discuss how they can improve the services.
Let's go back to the most fundamental thing of this complex issue, which is this tremendous disparity in health outcomes of the American Indian population in Montana. Prevention is something that our healthcare system does not do well, whether it's tribal or national, because just as an example,
that's right.
We have an epidemic of obesity among young people in America because there's too much sugar in their diet and not enough exercise, as one small example. What is the foundation's focus in the Indian healthcare area in terms of prevention as it relates to these huge disparities?
Well, right now, our tribes have just a historical opportunity. It's a partnership between Montana Medicaid and the tribal programs to implement what we call the Tribal Health Improvement Program. That program specifically focuses on prevention programs for whatever health disparity each different tribal community is facing. And they actually have the ability to create their own prevention programs and now have the dollars to be able to create those programs. The foundation's role in that is really to support them and provide technical assistance or potentially expert consultants that can help them develop those programs to get them planned and implemented to start delivering prevention services to their communities.
How far along are they in that process of developing these tribal plans?
A couple of the tribes are further ahead and have implemented tier one of this tribal health improvement program. The foundation's role has been to work closely with them to develop and bring on experts who can help them develop a toolkit of prevention programs that are evidence-based that they can then select from to address specific health disparities within their community.
You said evidence-based. That means it's proven, in my language, that it works.
That's right. It's proven and it works.
I realize you've been there less than a year in this current position, but you have an extensive background in Indian healthcare. What would you say professionally, in terms of your expectations, not being Pollyannish or rose-colored glasses, how fast do you expect to see meaningful change on the ground for the quality of healthcare that Indian children receive? Let's focus on the kids for a minute.
Sure. So for myself, I just have been incredibly honored and blessed to be in this position with the foundation in that we can go out, work on the ground with the tribal health programs and be able to offer them the support that they need. I think that the foundation and my perspective that we're really committed to improving American Indian health, but we understand that we're in it for the long run. We may not see any changes in the statistics for many, many years.
How do you feel about this personally? You got one life to live. Do you feel you're spending your time in a way that is meaningful to you, and if so, why?
I think I was put into this position for a reason. I believe that I've lost so many family members much too soon, and anything that I can do to help improve the lives of my people, that I'm committed to doing that, and I'm just blessed to be here to help on this journey.
Tressie White, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs. Contact us at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, the Cinnabar Foundation, the Lee and Donna Metcalf Charitable Trust, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.